Hello and welcome to QSO. This week our guest is Bob Greenberg, W2CYK. He's the creator of R-Finder. If you are into UHF and VHF communications, this is something you're going to want to hear. Don't touch that dial. Coming up, once again, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, the creator of R-Finder, right here on QSO.
One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20. For like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com.
Well, our guest today is Bob Greenberg, W2CYK. And Bob's been a guest before, but what's happening in the world that he exists, and of course in VHF, UHF communications, moves and changes so rapidly, and there's so many new things happening that we have to have him back from time to time to keep us updated. Bob, what's going on? I'm doing fine.
We've come up with a whole bunch of new stuff on our Finder. That's been fun. We just added to came out with version 3. Of our Finder on both Android and iPhone, and version 3 allows you to pre-store multiple locations, and that's really a predecessor to being able to put in routes into the repeater Finder.
So why don't you give a brief description as to what this thing does? Now, I've got it on my Android device. And I know my one son that has an iPhone has it on his. I don't know who else I know that has the people I know that have the app seem to like get addicted to it. So let's talk about R-Finder.
Oh sure. If you open up R-Finder on your device, if you have the latest version or one of the later versions, you'll see a button on the front screen that says Retain. And what Retain does is it says, okay, I'm going to load the data around me right now, the repeater data for the current location I'm at, and then maybe I'll override the device's location and say I'm going to this other location and preload that information for that place also. So you can actually add an unlimited number of locations and preload it into the device before you leave. So this is good for people that have, you know, emergency situations where they think they may not have internet when they get there, so they can preload it before they get there. For people that are going on a trip, and you know, we've got 178 countries, so it could be somewhere else in the world where you may be expecting not to have internet, but you want to be able to see the repeaters around you. So by doing this, it'll allow you to retain multiple locations in the device, the iPhone or the Android, et cetera. The other thing it does, what that actually set up was a prelude to what we're going, and it'll be somewhere maybe around Dayton or a little after Dayton, where you'll be able to go in and define a route. So you might say, I'm going from New York to from New York City to Nashville, for instance, and it will go and preload the machines along that entire route, so that you don't even have to reload as you go. So so that's pretty exciting. A lot of people have been asking for the ability to do routing, and we're actually going to bring it to you. So,
well, that sounds interesting. Now let me ask you a question. There's a companion program that goes along with our Finder, and you introduced me to the lady, I believe, at Dayton, and tell the folks how that works, because I think that isn't that also key to being able to program the HT or the radio that you've got just kind of like automatically?
Oh, sure. RT Systems, I probably introduced you to Karen Thompson over at RT Systems, and they've got a great piece of software, I got to tell you, for programming the radios. They've got software and cables for 100-some-odd radios, and the cool thing is you don't need to know anything about COM ports or anything like that. You just plug it into the computer and load the software, and it knows where your radio is right away. And then on the other side, you know, any of the programmers that you use, since there have been programmers, the toughest thing is entering the data into the memory locations of the software, and that can be a very lengthy process. And by using RT Systems version 4 and above, if you have access to the RFinder, a worldwide repeater directory, you can just make a query of a location right from the RT Systems software, and within a few moments you'll see the data show up on your screen, and then you can just write it into the radio. In fact, if you want to see a demo of that, you can go to youtube.com and just search for RFINDER, RFinder, and you'll see the first hit will be a video of how to do that.
Well, you know, I was going to say, I have, it seems like when I went on my phone to RFinder, I could go into a city and tell it I want X number of types of machines based on frequency, you know, and then the distance, how far out do I want to look. And they would give me a list, and it seems like, can you then not, from your phone, export the list by means of email, and then the program, if it resides on your notebook, you can pick the email up and load it into the program. Okay. Now.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you don't have RFinder, I'm sorry. If you don't have RT Systems, but you have one of the Kenwood NCP programs or something like that that'll let you program the radio, then you can go into RFinder, bring up a few of repeaters, and then just hit menu and export, and it will send you an email with that list. In a standard format, so that you can import it into the software and write it to the radio. So
okay, but now if
you try to cover really most of the programmers out there by doing that. You can also do it over web.rfinder.net. If you log into web.rfinder.net and do a query, there's a download capability there, not only for radio programmers, but also for points of interest on pretty much any GPS out there that allows you to load points of interest.
Okay, now let's just say that you have your HT sitting there, and you've got your programming cable, and you have RT Systems software on your notebook there. Okay, now, there is a way, and I don't understand it because I haven't done it. There is a way to go directly to the R-Finder website and not have to send yourself an email. You can there's some way to do that. I don't know how to do it, but tell me how you do that.
I told you about a minute ago. If you go to Google, YouTube rather, and do a search for R-Finder, you'll see the first hit there. It'll say R-Finder Worldwide Web Repeater Search by RT Systems, the very first hit. And it shows you a demo of how to do it. And basically what it is you open up RT Systems. If you have a version 4 or above, you make sure it's updated to the latest version. You just go into the built-in function to update it. And then, click File, Get External, and choose R-Finder. And what you do is you put in your R-Finder email and password, put in a radius, put in a location, and you don't need to know the lat long. You just put in a location. So, Sydney Opera House in Australia, or Eiffel Tower, France, or whatever, and it'll go and find that location for you and find you the machines around there.
Very cool. Now let me ask this question: what if you forget your username and password? What if you have the thing on you do the automatic updates and all that stuff on the phone? Is it usually your Google username and password, or
it's usually your Google email address if you're on an Android or whatever you normally would use for the App Store on an iOS device. But in either app, if you just click Menu Reset, you just put your credentials in there that you want it to be, and it will reset it for you. It'll change your ID for you. Let you reset your user ID and password right from the app.
I didn't know because I was wondering, because if you're on a notebook and you're wanting to log in and you're saying, gee, I don't remember my username and password, what is it? Now, most of the time, you're not going to dig it out of your phone anywhere because it's not there, you know. So it's like, I was curious as to how you would do that. Now, I haven't started. I've got the
RT. If you go on the web, I mean, honestly, Ted, if you go to web.rfinder.net, there's a function there for resetting your password also. So we have it all over the place. We don't want those phone calls. We want, those are the easy ones that we can automate. You know, we want the phone calls where people want to tell us how wonderful it is, and we get those calls every day. So,
well, I guess what I was saying, though, is that you start off with a frame of reference. I mean, some places it says if you want to change your password, click here. But if you've had a lot of activity on your account and over a period of time, you may not remember what email address you used. You know, it's like, you know, it's just, you're going to have to play a little guessing game to get to first base. So I'm just curious as to how that worked on. I didn't know if there was a way to send something from your phone that would give you a username and password.
No, it's even easier than that. I mean, honestly, you bring up the app in the phone, and you just say click Menu Reset and make it whatever you want it to be.
Ah, oh, I see.
Because it's linked to the license on the phone, so the phone will, we'll talk to the server and say, hey, and by the way, here's my new credentials, and it'll just reset it for you. It's really very, very, very easy.
Well, this program has basically revolutionized the way that we do, VHF and UHF repeater communications. I guess the other question I was going to ask you is, let's go down this road. If you go into R-Finder, can you say, hey, I want to find all the IRLP and Echolink repeaters only? That's all I want to look at. Can you, I mean, not that that's something that someone's going to want to do, but if you are an Echolink or IRLP fan and you're going to be traveling across the country, that's just something that's a factor. So are those repeaters designated there? Tell me about repeater designations as to what you're going to find. Because I know one thing, what is really cool about this program, folks, is that once you get a list of the machines in the area that you want to enter into your HT or your mobile radio or whatever, it's automatically got the splits, the PL tones, everything's there. See, so, I mean, it's like it leaves nothing for your mistake. Once you put it in there, you've got the PLs in there, you've got the whatever the splits are, everything's there. The offsets are all automatically placed into your device. And if I'm right, I think it also has some. It does something on the display too, doesn't it? Add data or something to the. So when you're clicking, you can actually see which machine you're looking at. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And our guest this week, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, the creator of R-Finder. We'll be right back with Bob right after this. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com. We want to thank you for listening to the QSO radio show. But we'd also like to remind you, it's so important that we hear from you. Please shoot us an email and say hello. Tell us where you're listening and what you're listening on. If you have a suggestion for a guest, be sure and mention that in your email and send it our way. You can do that by simply going to our website, and that's QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or simply TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com. Look for the tab on the website that says Contact Ted and then send your email. Either that or you can email us direct at TedRandall@TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall, TedRandall@TedRandall.com. Mention on your email, "I want to win," because we would like to make it worth your while for sending us an email, and we try to respond to as many as we possibly can. Also, you want to check out the streaming on the website. We have the QSO radio stream that runs 24/7 with all the older QSO shows, along with Glenn Hauser's World of Radio, a very comprehensive broadcast that covers the entire gamut of shortwave broadcasting, something like you've never heard. If you're into propagation and shortwave listening, you're going to get hooked on this program. Plus, the very wonderful Amateur Radio Newsline. And we repeat these shows about 6 times a day. So regardless of what time you click on the stream, if you listen for a while, you're going to catch up on everything. We really appreciate you listening, and we'd like to also invite you to follow us on Twitter and also friend us on Facebook. It's all under QSO Radio Show. Once again, thank you for listening to QSO. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK.
Yeah, well, you can get the full details of the machine. You can even, inside the detail screen, if you look at the IRLP node number and touch it, it will it'll give you a little pop-up telling you the current live status of the IRLP node, which is kind of cool. Something else that we are working with Jonathan over at RFD over at Echolink. And he's pretty close. I just got an email the other day saying that we should be ready for a test in a couple of days. You'll be able to search for Echolink machines. Let's say you want to talk to somebody in Johannesburg, South Africa, for instance. You'll be able to do a search for machines in Johannesburg, South Africa. And when that list comes up, it'll show you what Echolink nodes you have there. And you just click on the on that repeater. And in the detail, you'll see the Echolink node number. And all you have to do is touch the node number. And it will flip over to the Echolink app and call that node for you immediately. So we're actually connecting our Finder's apps on Android and iPhone with the Echolink apps on iPhone and Android. And I think really this, is the first time this has been done in amateur radio where we have apps that are, you know, starting to communicate with one another, you know, in cooperation. Just like we did with RT Systems, we're making it so that Echolink will be able to be tied to our Finder. So, for instance, let's say you say I want to talk to somebody in Johannesburg, South Africa, and you do a search on your our Finder app for machines in Johannesburg, South Africa, and you see there's an IRLP Echolink node, rather, and you click on that repeater and just touch the Echolink node number in the app, and it will immediately flip over to the Echolink app and connect to that node. So not only are we making it so that you can find the machines, but we're actually connecting you to the machines through the native Echolink app. And again, I think it's really the this is really the first time that two app developers have collaborated and connected their stuff together in this way, and it's pretty exciting.
You use the word collaborated. Isn't that what happens to milk if you let it set for a long time? I'm just kidding. You know, Echolink is so. I don't understand the controversy. I really don't. I just cannot understand this for the life of me. I think it's probably one of the most unique. I mean, and I'm not going to take anything away from IRLP. The both of them are fantastic things that hams have come up with that have done nothing but enhance the hobby, okay? I just think it's cool, though, that if I'm sitting in a doctor's office waiting room, bored to tears, okay, I can...
Jerry, you mean when you're experiencing artificial wait time?
Yeah, exactly. make them wait, you know? I can pick up my cell phone, open up the Echolink app, and I can log into the repeater in the Renaissance Center up in Detroit and talk to some ham buddies of mine sitting in a doctor's office. I mean, I just think that's cool, and I can't do that with IRLP because once I'm in deep in the bowels of the medical center, you know, no HT can see the outside world. I mean, there's nothing you can do in there other than sit and read the... Usually they have sports afield. They have a whole bunch of girly magazines, you know. But, you know, with the cell phone, I'm talking to some guy in Detroit. I think it's cool. I mean, I really think. And so when I hear hams come across.
And the quality is really good. I mean, it's really amazing how, you know, not only are you connecting with them, but it's not marginal. It's actually really good, like good fidelity and stuff.
Well, see, what's
so
really
it's
cool.
It's really nice. And I think, honestly, you know, you mentioned the controversy. And I think the controversy is where, you know, people are talking computer to computer. But, you know, personally, I think as long as there's a radio entry or exit point or somewhere where there's a radio attached to the thing, I think it's just fabulous, really a fabulous thing.
Okay, I'm gonna back you into a corner. Now I'm here. Here we go. Let's say that I'm on my cell and I got this guy in Detroit I'm talking to on the repeater, you know, and he and I get into a conversation that's, I don't know, maybe it could be, you know, it, for the rest of the world, it could just be boring to tears. There's something about the intricate operation of some radio station I used to work at, you know. You know, I think it's appropriate for me to be able to say to this guy, hey, move off the repeater. Let's get on another, just talk back and forth here real quick, and we can have a conversation without just, you know, making everybody else sit and listen to our tripe, you know.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I've never heard of anybody doing that. That's
I do it
cool.
all the time. I do it all the time because I, obviously with QSO, a lot of times I get people, I'll get two or three calls, and people want to talk to me about some kind of minutia, and I don't want to tie the repeater up and all that. So, I mean, I'll say, hey, let's go over here, and I'll dial them or call them. I don't know what it, log into them direct, you know, on EchoLink, and we sit there and chat.
Yeah, sure.
But to me, I would much rather see that happen rather than have to deal with what's your cell number and the guy's got to give you the cell number over the air and all that. You know, it's just simple. I mean, so anyways, that's my take on it, and I think that
I love that. That is a great use of the technology.
It's an intercom. It's not ham radio. No, I mean nobody's even pretending that it is. You know, so and then there's some other things too where I've noticed that there's some,
as long as you don't ID when you're doing computer to computer.
Oh yeah, or say
I'm just kidding.
Or verbally kidding. Say hi. Okay, you know. That's
yeah,
something.
Right. Exactly. Hi.
No, I think these technologies are so cool, but one of the things I'm finding, and one of the reasons I feel very strongly about our finder, let's just say that I am sitting in that doctor's office, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder about this, I wonder, of course I can dial direct and talk to some ham that I know, but the whole joy of amateur radio is meeting up with somebody that you don't necessarily know, or someone that you don't have all their contact information. They're just a ham acquaintance that you talk to. You know, so you know you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm wondering, you know, for example, you may want to know something about what's going on in the San Francisco area with amateur radio. Okay, so now I can go to our finder and I can find the EchoLink machine or an EchoLink machine, and then from the doctor's office I can log into that thing and talk to somebody in San Francisco on a machine, but without our finder on my phone, you know, it would be, you know, I have to get into Google and start looking, and then maybe not even find anything. So it's just the idea that this technology is so, I guess I want to say innovative. And one of the things about the hobby, everybody suffers from this. You know, when is the last time you actually were able to sit down and rag chew on HF? When is the last time, Bob? I'm being invasive here.
Oh my gosh. Well,
all right. Don't even.
I just would. No. To be fair, I normally operate HF out of my car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love mobile HF, and that's really my favorite mode. And I rarely get a chance to sit down and like flip the radio on at home because I'm usually, you know, busy working on our finder or
okay. Well, you know, my point.
Busy with my son W2EEO or something, scouting, you know, whatever. But
that's my point. My point is busy. We're all so busy that these technologies allow us to do things we wouldn't be able to do if we had to go through a whole bunch of steps to do them. Is my only point. So I think that, you know, our finder allows people to locate exactly what they need, and they can program it into the radio if you're going into town. Now that you can put multiple locations, that's just awesome. I mean, that's amazing. And, of course, as you go along, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more stuff come down the pike that you're going to think of. But now let's...
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, well, we should have the routing in by summer. So you should be able to say, you know, I want to start at this point and at this point and have all the machines load for that. You know, something else we've done is in the last... month and a half is we've started localizing our finder for various languages around the world. You know, we have the worldwide repeater directory, and we have users all over the planet, and many of them don't read English or speak English very well. So We made a decision about a month and a half ago, and I speak Spanish, so I did the first cut at the Spanish translation. We got that up on Android right away. And then we found somebody in France to help us out with the French translation. We have Japanese now. Actually, interesting about Japanese is the Japan Amateur Radio League, the JARL, the international liaison there, Ken, helped us directly with the translation to Japanese. So it's a ham radio operator in Japan that did the translation. So we're pretty excited about that. And then he gave us all of the official Japanese data for years. Unfortunately, it was in Japanese, so we had to translate that, which luckily we found a very, very fast way of doing. So we have the only translated official list of translated machines into English that exists for Japan. So that's pretty cool, and that's loaded into the system and ready to go, along with all the D-Star machines, of course, in Japan. So pretty much anywhere you go in the Japanese islands, you can find a machine around you.
So you also, obviously, you can locate D-Star machines on our Finder as well. And all.
Oh, yeah. We've got the D-Star machines for the entire world in it, and we update that regularly and dynamically. So that's pretty cool. Actually, I think we're like really the only way of finding the only reasonable way. There's other ways of doing it, but the only reasonable way of finding D-Star machines that are around you on the planet.
Well, the thing that you mentioned to me before we came on, and I want to bring this up because I think this is really important, and that is, as you're traveling across the country, one of the things that all amateur radio operators that I have spoken with, and I talk to a lot of guys because of doing this radio show, and that is, it's scary. You would think that the planet or our country had gotten hit by a bomb or something, because you're traveling through the country, you can jump on a machine and say, hey, this WB8PUM listening, and no one says anything. You can even get more aggressive and say, is there anybody around the repeater? And then if you do get somebody that answers you, it's, this is W blank XY blank. Is there a problem? You have an emergency? It's like, no, just wanting to wreck you. That's all. Oh, okay. I thought there was something wrong. In other words, we go from no conversation to saying, is there anyone on the machine? And they take that immediately that you got this problem. Well, no, I don't have a problem. I'm just looking for somebody to talk to. I think our finder.
I've had emails and phone calls of people telling me that story about how our finder has lit up dead machines. All of a sudden, people find a machine that's really been very inactive for years, and all of a sudden, it becomes now the rally point. So, for groups of people. So it's actually pretty interesting that that we're actually our finder is now unwittingly become the lighter upper of machines that have been traditionally dead for years. So it's kind of fun.
Well, it's interesting too, because I can remember taking a 2-meter rig and just going up the dial, with a 600
yes.
split, and it's going click, 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 and all of a sudden, here comes a machine full scale. And I thought, I didn't know that was here. I wonder what machine this is,
from?
And then the ID flies by at 45 words a minute in CW, and you're like, I didn't get that.
You didn't catch it?
it's like, what am I listening to, And so I can understand that totally. I can understand that because there's machines out there. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And our guest this week, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, the creator of R-Finder. We'll be right back with Bob right after this. A lot of radio amateurs get a big bang out of building antennas and experimenting, and I think we all do from time to time. But there comes a time when you're just dead serious about making contacts, and you want the antenna to be right. You want it to be a professionally designed, optimized piece of workhorse gear that's going to reach out there and do exactly what you want it to do. and the experimenting is over with. You're serious about operating. You're serious about contesting. You know, you're serious about working satellites or doing moon bounce, or maybe you're going on a de-expedition and you want to put up an array. I'm not talking about a portable antenna. I'm talking about an array. You want to put something on a tower that's big, that works. If you're looking for that kind of an antenna system, there's one place to look, and that's M Squared Antennas. M Squared. Their website is simply M, the numeral 2, Inc.com. That's M, the number 2, and then Inc.com. M2Inc.com. M Squared Antennas. What you're going to find is HF monobanders. You're going to find HF log periodics. You're going to find HF multibanders, 6-meter antennas, 2-meter antennas, 220 megahertz antennas, 440, 902 to S-band. You're going to find their horizontal Omni, the thing that, boy, I'll tell you what, you're working moon bounce. You want to work moon bounce and you want to work satellites. They've got it knocked. They've got all the EME products you could possibly imagine. They have preamps. They have rotators. They have rotator controls. They've got phasing cables. I mean, they've got it all figured out, including preamps and solid-state amplifiers. Now, if that's what you're into, that's it. I'm telling you, one place to go, M Squared Antennas. Once again, their website is m2inc.com. That's M followed by the numeral 2, Inc.com. Or you can go to our website, QSOradioshow.com. Go to their website, take a look around, and you know what? You can pick up the phone and you can call them and ask them questions about what it is you're trying to do, and they'll tell you what you need, and they'll work with you. M Squared Antennas.
We want to thank you for listening to the QSO Radio Show, but we'd also like to remind you it's so important that we hear from you. Please shoot us an email and say hello. Tell us where you're listening and what you're listening on. If you have a suggestion for a guest, be sure and mention that in your email and send it our way. You can do that by simply going to our website, and that's QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com or simply TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com. Look for the tab on the website that says Contact Ted and then send your email. Either that or you can email us direct at TedRandall@TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall, TedRandall@TedRandall.com. Mention on your email, I want to win, because we would like to make it worth your while for sending us an email, and we try to respond to as many as we possibly can. Also, you want to check out the streaming on the website. We have the QSO Radio stream that runs 24/7 with all the older QSO shows, along with Glenn Hauser's World of Radio, a very comprehensive broadcast that covers the entire gamut of shortwave broadcasting, something like you've never heard. If you're into propagation and shortwave listening, you're going to get hooked on this program. Plus, the very wonderful Amateur Radio Newsline. And we repeat these shows about 6 times a day. So regardless of what time you click on the stream, if you listen for a while, you're going to catch up on everything. We really appreciate you listening, and we'd like to also invite you to follow us on Twitter. And also friend us on Facebook. It's all under QSO Radio Show. Once again, thank you for listening to QSO. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK. Now, let me ask you a question, and let's get into this just a little bit. And that is, how many operators, I mean, you've got to be dealing with lots of repeater guys. Because of, you know, it's not just dealing with a database. I mean, I'm sure you talk to a lot of these folks. How has it become in terms of the friendliness to encourage people to use the machines and talk on them? Because it used to be, it seems like we went through a stage where 2 meters was really friendly and repeaters were open and
People were eager.
You mean in the 70s?
Yeah, they were eager to, hey, come on, get on our machine and talk. We want, you know, and there was rag chewing and all that kind of stuff. And there were certain people that they're in there every day at a certain time going down the road, and they all get to know each other.
Round tables.
You know, and then we went, it seems we got to another stage where the activity dropped off, things weren't as friendly, and operators that ran repeaters were not all that thrilled about people using the machines. You know, so I was wondering, how has our finder affected that, and what are you finding yourself in regards to VHF, UHF activity?
Well, you know, I mean, I've done some traveling around the country with our finder, and I mean, honestly, I found people are very friendly, and along the major routes, we seem to do very well with finding people that are monitoring at all times. And I've never had a situation where, you know, people didn't want to talk. You know, so my experience has been pretty good. Whether our finder has affected people's friendliness, I don't think it has, but I'd like to think it would.
Well, I mean, I didn't know because, I mean, I didn't know how the attitude of repeater owners has changed to some degree. I guess I could tell this story. I had, when I first moved to Nashville, I was a greenhorn at operating on VHF, you know, and I went on to this machine here in Nashville. It was at that time. This is years ago. This is 1979. I was going to go to Florence, Alabama for something, you know, and I had this novelty of a VHF 2-meter radio in my vehicle, you know, and this was this was new to me, you know. So I said,
it actually was pretty novel in 79.
So I went into this 88 machine, and I said, there were some guys talking, so I just went on and said, you know, this is WB8PUM, and I'm planning a trip down to Florence. I'm curious if you guys know if there's a repeater down there or what the pair might be. And this guy came back to me, and he said, you're not a member of this repeater association, and you don't need to be on this machine unless you're paying dues and you're a member and you've been accepted in good standing. And I'm out this whole thing. Whoa. So I thought, okay. I don't know anything, so I just apologized. I went back on. I said, "Oh, gee, I'm just very sorry. I was just looking for a repeater pair. You know, you guys have a good day." And that transmission,
such silliness.
That transmission triggered.
I honestly, I haven't heard that in a really long time.
Well, so. Okay. So what I'm saying is, though, that the fella came back to me and basically said, "Well, evidently you didn't hear what I said," and then he just turned the machine off. So. He punished the entire area, you know, because I logged in or talked on his machine. And, of course, back then, if we'd had our finder, we wouldn't have to go down there and ask the question. But the thing is we have variance of types of repeater owner-operators. You have things that are – they have closed repeaters and you have open repeaters. We got several here in Nashville that are extremely friendly. I mean, it's like, you know, the people that own and operate those machines, the more people that are on them, the bigger the grin on their face. So, we have that here, but I've noticed, and this is especially true with Echolink. If you are just looking for a rag chew and you're just kind of scouting around the country looking for a machine, you may look a long time because a lot of those machines are just not a lot of activity on them. So, that bears the question, is that because Echolink is always located, as a rule, on an off-the-wall machine somewhere, someplace, a smaller machine, maybe out of the outskirts of the city or whatnot? Or is there, at this point, just a lag of activity in some areas?
I'm sure it's just a lag because, I mean, like, in our area, you know, around Long Island, New York, mm-hmm. Nothing is podunk here, except out where I live. I live out in the farm fields. We have beach 2 blocks in one direction and farm fields 2 blocks in the other direction. You know, so. But for the most part, other than like my area, it's it's pretty well populated, and there's Echolink nodes all over the place. You know, one of the busiest repeater systems in our area is Limark, Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club. And am I allowed to plug them?
Sure.
And they have EchoLink. So, you know, and it gets used quite a bit, actually. A lot of people are on there.
IRLP.
And by the way, they have IRLP also. And there's a lot of people that use IRLP. In fact, they link their machines through a through an IRLP reflector. So, you know, we have good activity out here. So I'm not sure. I can't speak for the rest of the world, but
well, I'll tell you, in the Nashville area, we have a relatively large hole here in the Middle Tennessee area in regards to EchoLink. I don't think there's an EchoLink machine on any major repeater in this town, and there seems to be some sort of I don't know what it is, and it doesn't exist other parts of the country. It's just here. Must be the country music. That's the only thing I can figure. Now, what I want to do is I know you've probably told this story before, but I think this is so important because of the fact that there are folks in the amateur radio community that add to this hobby, that do things that makes the continuance of the hobby. And see, out of that comes new technology. In other words, as we people like you come up with a program like our Finder that runs mobile phones and handheld devices, as you develop those kind of things, that leads to even more technology and more stuff. And this is how the creation and creativity of all kinds of things. I mean, you figure the cell phone came out of ham radio. So let's talk about Bob Greenberg. I want to know about W2CYK, and I want the folks that are listening to know. Tell me about the number of generation of hams you've got here, how all of this got started, and just give me some background here. And you don't have to be in a hurry to do it. We just want to know what started all this in your head, mind, and heart?
Oh, in my head? Well, my grandfather was one of the first amateur radio operators. His call sign was 2 Alpha Mike Whiskey before there were letter prefixes. He later on became W2CYK, and obviously I have his call now. My grandmother was W2EEO, Echo Echo Oscar, and my dad is K2ACM. He's still with us. My aunt was W2GPK, and then later on N6VSU. So, and now my son Jesse is 12. He's been licensed since he was about 9 and a half, and he's W2 Echo Echo Oscar. He took his great grandmother's call sign. So four generations, and we only know of three of them in the world, you know, fourth generation hams. So it's pretty exciting to have been able to bring this, you know, through the family. We've always done very, very interesting things in our lives surrounding amateur radio as a family, and you know, I can remember grandma and grandpa taking me to Dayton or taking me over to, you know, ham fests or whatever. They used to give antenna lectures, and I'm sure that some of your listeners may remember the antenna lectures from W2LH and W2EEO, as a kid, I remember being in his lap, in, you know, Grandpa's lap when he would get on the air. You know, I remember him using a Morse code key, and you know, as really as a young child. So, you know, this is something that was ingrained in me at a very young age. I remember, you know, laying on the floor with my dad, and he had his radio in a break front, so he'd get on the floor to use the radio. And I remember laying next to him, and he talked to people on the air. So, you know, so we.
One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your
ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise. It's to the point. It's where your mind can grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com.
We want to thank you for listening to the QSO Radio Show. But we'd also like to remind you, it's so important that we hear from you. Please shoot us an email and say hello. Tell us where you're listening and what you're listening on. If you have a suggestion for a guest, be sure and mention that in your email and send it our way. You can do that by simply going to our website, and that's QSORadioShow.com. That's QSORadioShow.com, or simply TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com. Look for the tab on the website that says Contact Ted, and then send your email. Either that, or you can email us direct at TedRandall@TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall, TedRandall@TedRandall.com. Mention on your email, I want to win, because we would like to make it worth your while for sending us an email, and we try to respond to as many as we possibly can. Also, you want to check out the streaming on the website. We have the QSO Radio stream that runs 24/7 with all the older QSO shows, along with Glenn Hauser's World of Radio, a very comprehensive broadcast that covers the entire gamut of shortwave broadcasting, something like you've never heard. If you're into propagation and shortwave listening, you're going to get hooked on this program. Plus, the very wonderful amateur radio newsline. And we repeat these shows about 6 times a day. So regardless of what time you click on the stream, if you listen for a while, you're going to catch up on everything. We really appreciate you listening, and we'd like to also invite you to follow us on Twitter and also friend us on Facebook. It's all under QSO Radio Show. Once again, thank you for listening to QSO. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK.
You know, it's been in our family for a long time, since the 20s, you know. And, my grandfather did some development of products like the 5-band trap dipole. If you take a look on the October 1956 QST or many of the ARRL antenna handbooks and the radio handbook, you'll see his antenna design in there. So, you know, he made his mark, and he told me someday if you come up with something, bring it to everybody. So that's what I did. You know, it's just something that he asked me to do, oddly enough, about 25 years ago. So,
well, tell me,
I came up with this idea, and I was like, you know what, let's just do it. So,
I want you to tell me a little bit about his station, what you remember. Now, you may not remember brand names or whatever, but tell me What was your grandfather's the station that you remember the most, the setup that you remember the most that stuck in your head?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, there were always beams in the backyard on stands being worked on, and I can remember certainly making the traps with him, and his station. I remember he had a KWM Collins line station for a long time when I was really young. And I remember this linear that looked like a small stove. Like it actually was the size of a small stove, you know, a narrow stove. and I remember the tubes glowing in the bottom of that thing. And I remember when he would start talking, I remember the lights in the house dimming, you know. So I remember that station. I remember, I guess the 70s is when the TS-940 came out. I remember he got one of those, and he was very proud of that rig. He had a 940 until he passed in around 1990, and loved that radio.
Well, did you see any mercury vapor tubes glowing back in those days?
Well, you know, I remember all kinds of tubes glowing. I mean,
back before solid state rectifiers, everybody used 866A's and whatnot, and those things always
sure. They
were so cool looking. It was not, actually, I think. It would almost be fun to go back to using 866A's and some equipment just for the effect of watching the things, you know, light up. But this is wonderful from the standpoint that this is a legacy. You know, it isn't just a fourth generation ham. I mean, this is really an incredible story. You know, and then of course you're talking about from the grandfather. With your dad, and did you do much hamming with him, or did you sit and watch him? And other thing too, what about varied interests? I mean, what was your grandfather interested in? Maybe that your dad wasn't, or what were some of the things your dad was interested in that your grandfather maybe wasn't chimed in on?
Well, my grandfather really was very much radio. That's about all he did. It was radio and electronics. I remember his friends here on Long Island, New York, used to bring his equipment, their equipment, and he would fix it. You know, so he was always like the go-to guy for repairing. I remember him. I remember him Elmering a lot of different people, and many people have come to me through the years and said, you know, your grandfather Elmered me. So you know, he was always. More than happy to share it, you know, with people. He had actually offered to all of his grandchildren that anybody got their general ticket by 1980 would join them to go to the Moscow Olympics. And I was the only one that did it. And then we ended up boycotting the Olympics. So we ended up going to the Olympics. But I ended up going to college abroad for a couple of semesters, and that was very exciting. Instead,
so. Well, this is this situation though would be foreign to a lot of folks. I mean, a lot of people can't even imagine what it would be like to have a father and a grandfather and a grandmother, you know, involved in amateur radio, to have that kind of a background. So, yeah, and the other thing is it's interesting because the hobby is of sorts that you can have previous generations involved in it, and you don't. In other words, in a lot of things, like if the father is a stamp collector, the kids hate stamps, you know. you know, but this hobby is so diversified, and I think it's so people oriented that it's almost impossible for a second generation or a third generation to be adverse to it. I don't know. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, also, if you collect cards, you can be a stamp collector.
Collecting QSLs, yeah. Oh, man. When I was a novice, I just remember those little plastic things you could buy and stick your QSL cards in them and hang them. You know?
Yeah, that's what my son does. He doesn't hang them. He keeps them in a binder.
Oh,
yeah, he's got hundreds of them from all over the world. Well, you know, he's pretty. When he gets on the air, he gets pretty popular. You know.
Well, if you're a show off, you know, you got to have them all over your walls. You know, you got to have everything. You know, you got to have them all over the walls. You know.
Well, we actually just decided to consolidate a room. Because right now he's got a shack in his room, and but his room's getting pretty crowded, and you know, I've got a shack in my office, but we just decided to reappropriate one room to be the shack. So we're actually probably later today and tomorrow we're going to start setting that up. But
there you go.
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
So that was his idea. He was like, you know what, Dad, we should just have a shack. And so I know once we have a shack, he'll probably start putting cards up on the wall. And I know that that's his mode. So,
well, let me ask you a question. Know. Do you go through anything like I go through? And that is, if you buy something, it gets borrowed. I have two sons that are generals, and it's like if it's not nailed down, they're going to come and borrow it. But how can you be upset? I mean, how can you know? They got an interest in this radio stuff, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, whatever. No. Well, I do you have that at all? Does he ever come in and say, you know, hey,
yeah,
Dad?
The other day, I had a Radio Works. Oh, can I make a plug?
Sure, go ahead.
I had a Radio Works Carolina Wyndham in a bag, and I come outside and I find him. I found that he had thrown a line over the biggest tree he could find, and he was stringing this thing up between a couple of trees, and he was doing what I had told him to make sure that there's a sash weight on one side to make sure that that there's some play, and I came out. I was like, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm putting up this Wyndham." I was like, "Oh, what are you thinking?" He goes, "Well, you know, I wanted to have 40 and 80 in my room."
You know,
so
there you go.
So you got to see the yard here. I mean, there's antennas everywhere, but you know, he wanted to have, you know, he's got his own 6-meter beam, his own tri-bander, and he wanted to have 40 and 80 in his room. So how could I argue?
That's,
what do you say? It was sitting there in a bag, you know. It was like sitting. It was going to do something somewhere at some point. So
that's amazing.
How do you say no?
Well, it's just, I get the same thing, you know. It's like
it's my, you know, and he's 12, you know. So you know, it's kind of cool to watch. You know, I mean, so many of his friends. I mean, they just drool on themselves playing video games. You know, and it's really good to see him doing things, you know, that are, you know, technically or, you know, technology oriented or. You know,
well, it challenges thinking, and I know with my two sons that started off very early in amateur radio. Now they're both radio engineers, working professionally as engineers. And the amateur radio hobby really gives you an edge in terms of hands-on understanding, practical application. It makes a huge difference.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in the broadcast industry.
Well, when I tell you that, I can probably think back and I think of two or three different, or maybe four, gosh, different places where, you know, opportunities during my career were opened because I was an amateur radio operator. You know, so, you're a ham? Really? You got the job. You know, like one of the, you know what I mean? I'm a ham too. You got the job. Great. Yeah, a couple of times. You know, that specific line, you know, but just like being in a competitive situation and they find out you're a ham and they just know that, you know, some people know that we think differently, so.
You operate mobile. You said you love operating mobile.
So I operate HF and VHF mobile constantly.
Okay, well, let's talk about HF mobile because that's something that a lot of guys don't do. And of course, you know, you got to do things to make it work. I mean, you got to have a pretty good size antenna on the vehicle, and you've got
sure.
HF rigs are not. It's not like it used to be where you could mount a TR4 under the dash. You know, you have the split control head or whatever you're doing. But talk about your mobile operation and what band you operate and what's the most fun.
Sure. Well, I'm partial to. Screwdrivers. I like the Tar Heel screwdriver antennas, and I've got a full-size one on the truck. And and that that works very, very well. I mean, even 80 meters is just stunning on it, and the full-size ones are much better than the small ones, you know, so so that's pretty cool. And I've had an ICOM 706 Mark IIG in the truck for years. I just picked up a Yaesu 857, and I haven't done anything with it yet. I mean, I specifically picked up because we're going to put into the R-Finder app the ability to program the radio, you know, from the app. So in other words, pick a repeater and just hit program. It'll change the frequency on the radio with the PL and split and stuff like that. So so I picked one up just to prototype that, and we're going to do it through Bluetooth. So so that'll probably end up in a vehicle at some point. But I like the Mark IIG. It's great radio. Been using it for years. I have a VHF antenna attached to that also. I always use Diamond 7900s, SG7900s.
Great antenna.
I just... Diamond's so loud. I mean, so loud. I mean, it's not... It's like night and day on anything else. So it's like, why even bother? Mm-hmm. You know, so...
Well, one of the things a lot of people don't realize in that is the Diamonds are actually tuned radically different than a lot of the other mobile antennas you would buy.
Oh, yeah.
We won't get into that, but I mean they're excellent. And the other thing I was going to say, the Tar Heel, my son Matt, we got him a Tar Heel for Christmas. His is 80 through obviously 80 through 10, and then he has a homebrew amplifier in the trunk that he uses. And but most of the time, as of late, I've noticed he doesn't even bother turning it on. The Tar Heel.
I was going to tell you, don't need the amp.
With the Tar Heel, well, in the summertime and storms and static crashes and stuff, it makes a huge difference, especially mobile. You know, if you're out in the middle of nowhere and
But part of the fun of mobile, it's only, you know, it's like QRP. I mean, part of the fun of mobile is seeing if you can get through, you know, against the big guns. And I do very, very well. And I would never run an amp in the car. I can't even picture it. You know, in fact, I've got an old 2KW linear on my desk, and I probably haven't turned it on in 10 years, maybe longer, maybe 12 years. My gosh, you know, I just haven't turned it on because I feel like, you know, your antenna is really the key to your system. You can have you know, a mediocre radio. You know, it can have, you know, low power, but if you had to get a decent antenna, you're getting out, you know, and you'll hear them. So
I guess the only necessity, the only time I've ever seen amps as a necessity, you know, is if you are part of a regular group and you're operating on, you know, 75, 80 meters, and it's in the middle of the summertime, and you got static crashes that are 30 over, and you just want to talk, you know, then they help. They really do. But I guess I've never really seen the need for them. Above the 40 meter band, actually 40 and above, they were a hassle. They were just one other thing you got to do, you know, and you don't really need it. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO, and our guest this week, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, the creator of R-Finder. We'll be right back with Bob right after this. One of the things we noticed at the Dayton Hamvention 2012 was the number of people that came up to the QSO radio booth and said, "Hey, I got my ticket by studying with Ham Test Online. My wife got her license through studying with Ham Test Online. My son got his ticket. All of my kids got their tickets with Ham Test Online." I mean, it went on and on and on. And there's a reason why. I mean, I've looked at all different kinds of study materials for getting your ham ticket. And either there's a rule, they're either cram sessions where you just memorize the answers, or they're so technical that you can get the ticket providing you want to study for the rest of your life. But Ham Test Online is kind of a perfect blend of that. In other words, they teach you. You actually learn the material. They give you pictures, simple descriptions, however. Rather than a book that rambles on and on and on and on about something, it's concise, it's to the point, it's where your mind can grasp
grasp it. And then when you see that question come around again on the test, you're ready for it because you've got a brief overview. I mean, you don't know all the technical implications of some mathematical formula, but you have a good idea on the concept, I want to say, of how something works or operates. Therefore, you know how to pick the right answer. Now, if, say, you're studying and you get the wrong answer, it will feed you back that question again and again and again. And finally, you can't help but learn it. You can go up to Ham Test Online and literally spend hours if you wish, and it doesn't bore you. You don't feel like you're not yawning like reading into a book or listening to a tape recording or something. It's a very unique experience. If you know someone that you'd like to see get their ticket, give them a gift certificate. Give them a membership to Ham Test Online. If you want to upgrade and get the next license up, enroll with Ham Test Online. Don't fool around. Don't waste your time. The technician ticket's only around $20 for like 2 years. You can't miss. Go to their website. It's so simple. HamTestOnline.com. That's HamTestOnline.com.
We want to thank you for listening to the QSO Radio Show. But we'd also like to remind you, it's so important that we hear from you. Please shoot us an email and say hello. Tell us where you're listening and what you're listening on. If you have a suggestion for a guest, be sure and mention that in your email and send it our way. You can do that by simply going to our website, and that's QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com, or simply TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com. Look for the tab on the website that says Contact Ted, and then send your email. Either that or you can email us direct at TedRandall@TedRandall.com. That's TedRandall, TedRandall@TedRandall.com. Mention on your email, I want to win. Because we would like to make it worth your while for sending us an email, and we try to respond to as many as we possibly can. Also, you want to check out the streaming on the website. We have the QSO Radio stream that runs 24/7 with all the older QSO shows, along with Glenn Hauser's World of Radio, a very comprehensive broadcast that covers the entire gamut of shortwave broadcasting, something like you've never heard. If you're into propagation and shortwave listening, you're going to get hooked on this program. Plus, the very wonderful Amateur Radio Newsline. And we repeat these shows about 6 times a day. So regardless of what time you click on the stream, if you listen for a while, you're going to catch up on everything. We really appreciate you listening, and we'd like to also invite you to follow us on Twitter. And also friend us on Facebook. It's all under QSO Radio Show. Once again, thank you for listening to QSO. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And now back to our guest, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK.
Even on 20 meters, I mean, I like using good operating practices to slip in between the big guns, you know. You know, and you say mobile and, you know, the operators tend to listen, you know, for the mobile, so that's kind of cool. And what else? Oh, let me finish my particulars. I got a D700 also, with another SG7900. So I got a pair of SG7900s on the truck, and this way I could have actually three VHF, UHF, VFOs going simultaneously in the truck, but and an HF. And, you know, one time Dad and I, you know, K2ACM, he and I and Jesse was my son, he was pretty young. He didn't have a ticket yet. I think he was about 7. We were driving up to Vermont, and Jesse's asleep in the back of the truck, and Dad's half asleep on the passenger side. And I'm talking to this guy in London on, like, you know, 3995 or something like that, 3795 rather. And you know, I'm having a nice chat with him. The signal's beautiful. I mean, I had him like 10 over. And my dad he looks over at the VFO and says, "Yeah, you talking to somebody on 75 meters from your car?" You know, so you know, in Europe, you know. So he was pretty impressed by that, and you know, I like doing that kind of stuff. I like doing the, you know, the oddball, you know. Let's work some DX on 75 meters from the car. You know, it's fun.
What, as a rule, just going down the road, if you're running HF, what is the, what's your favorite band? And where, I mean, I think everybody has a place where they tend to migrate to most, although you may, like, if with a Tar Heel, of course, you can just move all over the place. It's just a matter of, you know, retuning.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Ted, I'm not a band snob. You know, I like, you know, I have some friends here that are 2 meter simplex nuts. And they get mad about people using repeaters. You know, they actually get mad about it. You know, you wrote the repeater directory, so you know you're not welcome anymore. Now they haven't said that to me, but you know, but I'm just kidding about that. But you know, but they're actually like, you know, they're literally snobs about simplex operation. And if anybody is caught, you know, on a repeater, they get chastised. You know. But that's not a joke. That's true. But I'm not like that. You know, I think every band and every mode has a place, and, you know, and it's just fun to do it all. So, you know, I mean, I like 17 meters, certainly, you know, when I'm driving. I like that an awful lot. You know, if 10 meter pops open for some reason, that's always a blast. You know, I used to have a 6 meter Halo, and I liked playing on 6 meters. A few years ago, I just changed trucks, so I'm not, I don't have all the antennas up yet. One of these days I'll get the Halo on, and, you know, I didn't want to be too obnoxious with this truck.
Well, 20 meters is a busy band, and, you know, I was going to say, one of the things I like about 40 is 40 is just always there. I mean, it's there 24 hours a day, you know, 40.
Yeah, 40 is great.
But 17 has a certain amount of, It has a personality all of its own. It's different than 20 in some ways. I don't know how to describe it. It's a pleasant band to operate.
It is, but it does come and go, you know. So, you know, it just kind of is what it is. It comes and goes, and it's fun when it's really fun when it's open, you know. So, and it just seems to, I don't know, for some reason it feels different when you're operating on 17 meters. And it just may be that it's, you know, not like one of the original traditional bands, but
well, yeah, I don't hear anybody talk much about 15 meters. I don't hear anybody saying, you know, I'm working so and so on 50. Since 17 came along, I think that for some reason, you know, 15 has been almost a forgotten band. You know I go up and listen all the time, and I rarely hear anything up there. 17 will have all kinds of activity on it, you know, and even 12 will have, you know, something on it, but 15 will just be, you know, just quiet as a mouse, you know. I think it's just the novelty of the other bands. Although, you know, 15 used to be, I mean, because that was a big 15 meter beams. There were a lot of 15 meter beams that went out. There was a lot of folks operated 15 meters because a lot of those guys that were up there operating that band were there because. It required less hardware in terms of, as you said, the big guns to get and compete. It was a lot quieter. There weren't as many kilowatts up there. There was a lot of people running 100 watts and that sort of thing. So I think, yeah, but I don't know.
I remember my first DX contact was on CW. I had my novice ticket. I was on a Drake TR4. I was on one of Grandpa's old five-man trapped dipoles and 15-meter Charlie Whiskey. I worked OK1 KKF. It was my first DX contact. So, you know, I used 15 as a kid in the mid-70s, mid to late 70s. But, you know, when it's dead, it's dead. You know, Jesse and I go fishing a lot, and we don't call it fishing. We call it catching. You know, we like to catch. So, you know, if we're someplace where it's dead, we're either going to change bait or we're going to move. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm the same way with, you know, and most of us are probably the same way with radio. You know, if it's dead, it's dead. Go find something else, you know, see what's open.
You know what's weird, though? A lot of times, you'll tune up and down the band. You don't hear anything, you know, and it's not that the band is not operating. It's there's just nobody there. And all you have to do is have just a couple of guys up there, and all of a sudden the thing will just spring to life because people are tuning by and they hear something, you know, like, it's open, you know.
Oh, sure. Well, Jesse and I just did a little mini D expedition to Bonaire, and we were operating Papa Juliet 4 Sierra was our call sign down there. And we would go scuba diving during the day. We would go and play radio at night. And by the way, just as an aside, we're going to start doing little mini D expeditions like this. So if anybody is interested, make sure you get in contact with me if you like to scuba dive and play radio. I hope you didn't mind me plugging that, right? That was cool.
There you go. No, I'll just send you a bill. That's all. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So, anyway, we were
DJ
4S, and I got on one evening, and I think it was 20, and it was dead as a doornail. I mean, it was dead, and we had the band scope up there, and there was nothing on the entire band. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to toss out a couple. Well, I toss out a call, and immediately I'm getting calls back. And within 2 minutes, I've got people calling me right and left on this one frequency. And I'm looking at the band scope, you know, with the,
spectrum analyzer?
I'm looking at the band scope, and nothing's going on except on our frequency. And they're calling me right and left, and people are saying, you know, the band was dead. You're like the only signal on the whole band.
I think that happens more frequently than we realize. But incidentally, don't ever fear plugging something. You know, we are a nonprofit operation. This is done. We do this totally, completely out of love to promote the hobby. So anytime you want to plug something, or anybody else does for that matter, we're wide open, because the more folks more folks know about things, the better off we are. I think that happens frequently, and I think that's demonstrated really well during contests, because you can go up to say you go to 15 meters, you don't hear anything, not a thing up there, you know. Next day there's a contest. All of a sudden now the band has got all kinds of activity on it, and conditions really haven't changed. You know, they're exactly the same. So I think it has a lot to do with what you hear. And if you hear something, then you know it's open. And of course there's the beacons all over the place that ought to be able to tell us, you know, where the propagation is and where it's going. And boy, I mean, there's programs now, I guess there's apps on phones and everything else that tells you what the MUF is and what beacons are being heard where and all. It's amazing. It really is. You know, it's like it's all figured out. Before you even turn on your radio, you know what you're going to hear before you even get there. Now, let me say this. The R-Finder software, we're going to go back to where we were for just a little bit.
We're going to re-plug R-Finder. That's great.
You know, I'll tell you what, it's guys like you that makes this radio show fun, you know. I'll tell you
what. Hi, everybody.
What I want to do in that is, well, people get, if you stay on something too long, they get bored. See, we kind of move around a little bit. I'm sure there's still, I'm telling you, there's folks out there right now listening to this that still have a whole handful of questions about the software. They've never heard of it. There's people. Now, look. There's a lot of guys out there that are over 40 years of age that's got smartphones, okay? And a lot of them are phobic about using smartphones I've got a cousin, and he said he went into the Verizon store, you know, and he said, I need a new phone. They said, well, what do you want? And they said, well, here, look at this one here, and this has got the camera in it. And he said, I don't want no camera. And they said, well, it just comes in every phone now. There's a camera in every phone. He said, I just want it to ring, and I want it to dial. Yeah. So if you have a smartphone, This is an app that you may not use any other app. You may be phobic about doing anything else with it. Let me tell you what. This is an app you really need to have on your smartphone, because as you're traveling across the country, if any time you are out of town or, you know, you're in a location and you're saying to yourself, huh, I wonder if there's a repeater around here, that app's going to tell you immediately, and you're not going to – there's no hunting down the repeater directory that's 4 years old. This thing is up, you know, is up to date, and it's easy to operate. It's not, there's nothing on, about this app that's difficult. Now, here comes the good part. Bob, I want you to tell the people how expensive this thing is.
It's 83 cents a month.
So 1 year of our finder costs how much money?
$9.99.
I'm sorry?
$9.99.
Yeah, you broke up when you said that.
You know, I'm so sorry. Yeah. It's $9.99 a year.
So I mean, you can't keep a repeater directory up to date. I mean, I don't know what repeater directories cost now. I don't think you.
$13.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think you can get them for that. And this is current.
It's $13 a year for the repeater directory. It's $40 a year for the CD. You know, for the travel.
And I'm not trying to down the repeater directory, but let me tell you something. You have no idea how many of those things I bought in the past, and you can never find them. I mean, it's like, hey, well, put one in the glove box, you know, and then, you know.
Well, not only that, and again, like you said, we don't want to, you know, I mean, these things have been around for a long time, and, you know, and in the context of what they were at the time, it's what we had, you know. But. You know, if you read the repeater directory, it's very hard to correlate, you know, a location to where you are right now. You know, it's written in and laid out by regions and by, you know, areas, you know, within a state or within a state. But sometimes you don't know where you are, you know, and we've taken the repeater data for 178 countries and geo-encoded it. And what that means is that we took and made it so that each and every repeater has a latitude and longitude, and they're not right on the money, so don't everybody get nervous. They don't need to be right on the money. We actually cut down some of the precision on it so that you can't, like, just walk up to the machine with, you know, with the data in our finder. But it enables you, no matter where you are, pretty much on the known planet, if there's repeaters around there, there's a pretty good odds that you'll find them, you know, right around you.
Well, it's like,
I told
it's
you
like
we were in Bonaire, and we were standing up on top of the mountain in Bonaire, and I was able to open up the machine in Curacao. You know, I pulled out our finder and looked it up and plunked it in, and I was able to see the machine over there. So it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, anywhere you go on the planet, you'll find machines.
Well, what you were talking about, though, and that is this. If you look in a repeater directory, you can look in a town like, say, Boston, you know, and there's the repeaters that are there, whatnot. But with our finder, you look at a machine, it tells you exactly how many miles you are away from that machine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you can say this one's 5 miles away, this one's 3 miles away, you know. And that makes a huge difference, because if you're running a little
HT,
running an HT or something like that, you may not hit that one 5 miles away for whatever reason, you know. So
yep.
You can do a list of machines within 3 miles or whatever I don't know what the increments are, but, I mean, there's like, tell us what the
anywhere from 0 to 90.
You know, so you've got, you know, the close-up machines that, you know, with an HT you're going to be able to talk to or hit.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was saying, though, is I'm talking about losing repeater directories. I mean, you can say, like, I'm going to put one in the glove box of the vehicle, you know, and then you're out on a trip somewhere, and one of your sons opens a glove box, pulls a repeater directory out, crawls in the back seat, starts looking at it with his HT or something, and then he lays it down, and that's it.
Oh, it's worse than that.
It's gone.
It's perfect bound with glue. And if it sits in your glove box, the binding comes apart. So I've had like more than one of them where it just, you know, the book's just falling apart in the car because the book was overheated.
So at least with our finder, you don't have to look for it. You know it's on your smartphone. And wherever your phone is, that's where our finder is, you know?
So you know what? I mean, people are very, very religious about keeping their phone close to their hip, you know? So, you know, it's kind of hard not to find your repeater directory when you've got our finder on your phone.
There you go.
You know, and with these devices now, they're converged. You know, they've got internet access. They've got, GPS in them. You know, so it now makes it possible to have an app like this. I mean, years ago, I used to run Travel Plus on my laptop, and I actually had a GPS receiver attached to my laptop through a serial cable, and I would use that as my repeater locator, and it worked great, but that was an awful lot of hardware to have floating around in your car. You know, I had to have a 12-volt power supply for my laptop. I had to have, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
By the time we were done, there was a whole bunch of stuff that you needed to make it happen. And it was great at the time, I mean, you know, because that's what we had. But now we have converged devices, you know, a small handheld device with GPS and internet with a display on it with some computing capabilities. And, you know, now we can have everything in our hand that, you know, used to take, you know, the entire passenger seat to make happen. So just like everything else, it just keeps getting miniaturized.
So are you going to get this thing so where you can hook it up to, say, for example, like a Swan 350?
Ha, 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 ha.
That's okay. I walk into our local electronics store.
At least I knew what it was.
I walk into the local electronics store here. And I walk up to the counter and I say, I need a pair of 6146s and an 807, you know. And those guys actually know what I'm talking about, but they laugh every time. I try to come up with something different each time I walk in because, you know, it used to be those things were sold over the counter. Okay, now let me ask this question here. Do you know, in regards to the RT system software, is there, can you think of anything? I mean, I know that the little, you know, I don't know. I hate saying it over the air because I just call them waxons because that's the only thing I, there's some other strange pronunciation.
I call them woozons. I don't know.
Woozons,
yeah.
Okay, well, anyways, I've said if they're going to market in the United States and they're not going to tell us how to say it, then we can say it however we want to. What about these little ones that are out now? What is it, Biofeng or something? I don't know. They're little.
Yeah, Baofeng.
Is that how you say it? How do you learn all these pronunciations anyways? I mean,
well, you know, I had a job where I traveled all over the world in parts of Alabama for IBM. So, you know, I'm used to, like, looking at things and kind of knowing how they should be pronounced, you know. But there is a variety of rigs that RT is supporting. So, like for instance, the KGUV 123, 2 meter 224/40. I know that rig is covered as well as the KGUV 6 and the KGUV D1P from Wuzon. Those are the handhelds.
Now, are they making? Do you know if at this point?
They have it for the new mobile also, the UV 920P. That's on the Wuzon side, and then for Baofeng they have the UV 5R. So you can actually program the UV, which is very challenging rig to program. So it's nice to have a good programmer for it.
Now, do you know if the Waxon folks are they making a tri-bander now, or are they all just the up until I knew about it was just dual band radios? You could pick
yeah, one of the handhelds has 220 in it. It has 2 meter 224/40 in it.
I don't know if that's a tri-bander because up until a certain point, they were dual banders. You could get the 220 version, but would only do like 220 and 440 or 220 and 2 meters. I couldn't remember. It was just two bands is all you could get. It wouldn't do all three at once. And I didn't know if they had come up with a new model. Tell me about their mobile. Have you seen that or worked with that thing at all or seen anything about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we saw it at Dayton. I mean, I didn't work with it. I haven't actually physically touched one. But, you know, I haven't heard anything bad about it.
Well, I guess the only thing I noticed, and maybe just the pictures weren't clear enough, seems like most guys, when they buy a mobile, they want a detachable head, you know, because they want to be able to mount the head somewhere where they can get to it. And it looked to me like that was a one-piece radio. I just couldn't tell. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's got something detachable to it. It's hard to say.
I'm actually looking it up now that you're bringing it up, because I'm like, I don't know. Is it?
And it's funny. People ask me questions.
I mean, honestly, the mobile isn't that cheap. You know, the mobile's... I think it's around $300, so it's not like it's not like a particularly inexpensive rig.
No, I thought to myself, this doesn't look like it has a detachable head, and I think that would be a real disadvantage to a lot of guys, because I know almost everybody I know that is running a 2 meter 440 dual band rig in the vehicle, they've got
That looks detachable to me.
Is it? Well, then maybe it is. I couldn't tell from the pictures that I was looking at.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. That's interesting to see these.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at a picture right now in on eBay, and it is without question detachable. In fact, it comes with a wedge, so you can mount it on a little bit of an up or down angle.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you can actually mount it. Angled up a little bit, you know, the control head. So
now the reason I brought up the Waxon and you say it differently, and the other,
because you're thinking wax on, wax off. That's what you're thinking.
Okay, so automotive. Who that was? Wasn't that part of an automotive wax ad or something like that?
No, that was from Karate Kid.
Oh, really? I can't remember. Oh, there was a commercial that they did. There was some miracle car wax, and they must have maybe making a play from the Karate Kid.
Oh, thing. Could be.
Yeah. Anyways, how do we get off on that? The thing I was going to ask about is the influx of these radios, the Waxons and the other brand, Beofung or whatever it is. Has that not spurred more activity as far as our finder is concerned? I mean, don't you, with the advent of those radios, there's a lot of people that get those radios and they don't want to fool with trying to program them, you know? And
well, so, I think there's a couple of things, you know. I mean, like we had 1,500 users last April, okay? We're going into April now, and within 2 weeks we'll be at 6,000.
There you go.
Maybe a week or two. We'll be at 6,000 users, you know. So I think a few things have happened. I think one of the things that have happened is that you know, they dropped the more requirement worldwide, really, for the entry, at least at the entry level for ham tickets. And that is like, you know, it really opened the floodgates. It said, oh, okay, well, you know, yeah, anybody that didn't become a ham because they couldn't quite get over the hump of learning Morse code now is saying, hey, I'm going to go get my ticket now, you know. So, and people that, are CBers that, just want to have something a little bit more, little something extra, they're, you know, getting their tickets, you know. And those people are used to operating mobile, and they're finding a very low entry-level price point for HTs with these devices. I mean, you know, they're around $100 for crying out loud, or less. You know,
yeah, well, for the dual to pick up the dual band, Beofungs or whatever, you can buy them for $45 free shipping out of China. You know, some people.
But, I know.
So here,
it's craziness.
Yeah, well, here's the thing though. When you would buy, I think everybody still has. I think almost all hams still have their sacred HT. They may have two or three of them. But these radios are extremely, I'm not going to say extremely expensive, but they're a little pricey. And it's something that if you drop it or you lose it, it's a crisis. I mean, it's like you don't feel good for 2 or 3 days, you know. Drop a THF-6 in a mud puddle and or accidentally leave it somewhere. You know,
oh, yeah,
and
that's a $350, you know, handheld. You know,
yeah,
you're talking about a...
In three, and
you,
know,
you take a look at these Yaesu VX8s, you know, those are pretty pricey, you know. But it's amazing. I mean, I'm looking at the Baofeng right now on eBay, and I'm seeing prices like $43. I mean, it's crazy.
But
from China.
So
like
what?
You said, shipped from China. And they're available in colors, you know, blue, red, orange, black, you know, whatever you want. You know, so
well, I,
you know,
I guess
pretty wacky.
My point is that for entry level people getting into ham radio and they want a radio, they don't have maybe the budget to spend, they buy one of these and that's fine. And the thing is if it's dropped, if it's accidentally left somewhere, you know, instead of being upset for a couple of days, you're upset for 30 minutes. You know, it's like, I'll order another one. I mean, that's, if it quits, you know, you just get another one, you know. So I guess it's a different world. It's a different kind of thing, you know. But I still think, I believe that people, I mean, obviously the brand name radios like Yaesu, Kenwood, and all the others are easier, I think, easier to program, easier to deal with. They have more intelligent menus on them and that sort of thing. These things are a little, I mean, at times trying to get them to do something is a bit nonsensical. But
it is challenging because everything's done through deep menus, and it is challenging. And, you know, you mentioned RT Systems before. I had to bring us back on track, but... RT Systems makes it very, very easy for you to program not just the radio but the features in those radios, you know. So if you find yourself fumbling with the menus on any of the radios, VX8s, VX7s, you know, VX6s, or the Baofengs, et cetera, you know, the Kenwoods, you know, the software from RT Systems makes it very, very easy for you to program those things and clone them amongst multiple radios, you know. And the addition of course, RFinder and, you know, fetching the repeater data into RT Systems using RFinder makes it an absolute breeze, you know, to program. What used to take an hour of research and typing and checking, and that takes a minute. You know, you're just fetching the data and saying, okay, I want this one, this one, this one, and this one. And you just hit write, and it goes up into the radio, and you're done. You know, so, you know, it used to take quite a bit of time, you know, and was error-prone, is now really a no-brainer. You know, it's very easy to do.
Oh, this is, and I think, once again, you know, I just want to applaud your dedication to the hobby and developing this, because it's... You know, it's a revolutionary thing. It's something I think every guy that's got an HT really ought to be able to be able to do this. And if for no other reason, I think it too is the fact that none of us, I don't know what's going on, but it just seems like no one has any time anymore. I mean, it's like everybody runs, you know. I remember when I was younger, I think, man, all the time we had, we didn't have didn't have computers, didn't have cell phones, we didn't have any of this technology, and yet we still had, we had more time to do things that we wanted to do. And now we have all these conveniences. It seems like all it's done is speed us up. But part of that technology is things like our finder that allows you the time to enjoy the hobby and to be a user of the hobby and not require you to be, you know, a programmer. Because it is complex reprogramming an HT. I mean, you know, a guy just walks up and I'll use the THF6 as an example because I've got one. You take the THF6, you can go menu crazy trying to figure out how do I get this thing to do this, you know. And I mean, you can sit there for hours just punching buttons and never get where you're wanting to go. You got to dig the manual out or find somebody else that's got one that can talk you through it, you know. They're not really friendly. I mean, when you get right down to that, it's not a situation where they're... Now, once you learn the radio, I watched a blind kid here in the Nashville area had one, and he could make the thing all but talk. I mean, he would just blah, 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 all the way through the thing, and he knew his way around.
Well, I'm sure he made it talk so that he could, like, know what it was doing while he was doing it.
Well, I mean, he knew the menus and knew where he was. He couldn't see it, but he knew where he was. and he could do anything with that radio. And I remember we were together one time, and I said, well, you know, I handed him my radio. I said, how do I do it? And in 5 seconds, he had it done, you know. So it's a matter of familiarity. But the thing is that one good thing about our finder is if you're traveling into an area or even in your immediate backyard, you pick up an HT. This is a godsend because you can program all the machines in, all the splits, all the PL tones. Everything is there. And it's in it, like you said, in a matter of just a few seconds, you've got it.
Sure, so. And what we're hearing from people is that, I mean, you know, a lot of times you buy these programmers, you get these programmers, and you use it once, and then you, like, kind of set it aside. But, you know, because you program the radio and you're done. But I find that people are telling me that they are actually programming and reprogramming their radios on a regular basis now because they don't have to worry about typing the stuff in. They're actually using the programmers more often than they did in the past because they can now just look up the data and have it just flow into the radio directly. So there's all kinds of interesting nuances that go on when you start converging these technologies and saying, okay, well, you know, let's go get the data for, you know, let's write it to the radio. Let's get the information from the radio. It's a very interesting thing that's going on with it.
The other thing I was going to ask you about, and because I know you're dealing with these databases, how full are our cities in terms of repeaters? I mean, is there still places to put machines up, like, for example, if you're trying to coordinate, because you're not looking at just the local frequency, you're looking at a city away and a county away and that sort of thing. Is there still space to put 2-meter machines on? Or
it depends on where you are. I mean, like, around here, it's pretty rough. You know, we have a group here called Frequency Corner. It's called the Metro Core. And they, you know, it's challenging. There's a lot of machines here. For instance, if I populate my phone from our finder, I can look in the logs and I can see that I did it this morning. I'm looking at it right now. I got 1,098 machines loaded into my phone. That's 125 kilometer square around me. You follow me? Now, I'm on the edge of the ocean. Okay? So I'm looking to the east, to the west of me, rather. I'm looking to the end of Long Island, and I'm looking up into southern New England. Okay?
All right.
And within 125 kilometers, I came up with 1,000 machines.
Oh, wow.
Now you think, yeah, over 1,000. So, you know, it really depends on the area you're in. I mean, I'll just take a look at the logs real quick while we're chatting. But, like, you know, I'll take a look at a place like somebody just made a query from near Syracuse. That's upstate New York, and they came up with 247 machines, you know. So, you know, there's a big difference between 1,000 machines and 247. You know, I see somebody else just did a query up the island, up Long Island, a ways from here, probably about 30 miles from me. They came up with 911. You know, somebody made a query from, let's see, I guess it's, where are we here? Oh, I'm sorry. Southern France, a little bit west of Toulouse, and they came up with 18 machines around them. So, you know, it all depends on where you are on the planet.
And once again, you know, rather than a directory that you're looking through and you're saying to yourself, oh, there's a machine here, and you try it, you can't hit it. And, I wonder what that's all about. Since that thing was printed, they may have changed the PL tone on it. It could be that it's just too far away from you, and it's a lower-profile machine. You'd never know that, but when you start searching and saying, hey, I just want to find the machines within 5 miles of here because I'm just looking for communication on my HT, that's when that you got it. You know, it's going to work. It's going to work flawlessly. What are they?
Sure, and it really depends on the – we have machines up on a place called Bald Hill. It's a little west of me. And it's pretty high up, you know, and I can hit it with an HT from here, and it's 25 miles from me.
Oh, yeah, of course, it depends on the location. Now,
and it's got a gigantic footprint. I mean, it goes all the way up to, like, Massachusetts. And, you know, if the band's open on 2 meters, it'll even hit the Outer Banks of South Carolina, North Carolina, rather, you know. So
that's amazing. I don't want to keep you much longer because I know you got things to do, but I was going to ask you this question, and this is not necessarily, I don't want to say this is a plug. It is a plug, but it's something I think folks are going to be interested in. Okay, so it's basically $10 a year, $9 or whatever for
$9.99. Yep.
For the R Finder on your Droid or your iPhone or your iPad or your Droid tablet or whatever. The app is available. That's an extreme reasonable price. Now let me ask this question: what does the RT Systems software sell for with the accompanying cable, say, for an HT? Now, this is ballpark. I just want folks to know about how much this stuff costs if they want to go down this road, because it's not expensive.
I think the kits are under $50.
For RT Systems?
I think the kits are under $50, per radio. And sometimes a single cable could be used on multiple radios, you know, so... You know, it's not like you have to buy a cable every time for a radio. If you have the same cable, you can, you know, you can reuse it. But they've got like a lot of radios. You know, and there's other products out there too. I mean, you know, we talk to them also. I mean, there's an open source project called Chirp. If anybody uses Chirp and you have your app on your phone, same email and password works in Chirp. Same exact way as RT, you know. So, pretty much, and we're actually looking at two other applications. I'm not going to mention which ones yet, but there are two other applications that use repeater data, and they probably will connect to us shortly. So, we're trying to reach out to everybody that has a piece of software that uses repeater data, or potentially could use repeater directory data, and we want them to connect to us. We want everybody to connect to us.
All righty. Well, listen. You know what? This kind of puts a lid on this, but I know folks love listening to you talk because you're an amateur radio operator at heart. Not just you're in this is not necessarily a business venture. It's a heart venture with you, and. And that's what really makes it so cool. Now, if you go up, if you're on your Droid, you can go to what is it? What do they call Google? It used to be Google Play. What is it now?
It's Google Play now. It used to be called the Android Market. So you go to Android Market or Google Play. There's still some older devices that still say Android Market. So you can just go into the Market or Play and just do a search for R Finder or my call sign W2CYK. You'll find it and install it right there. And the same email and password that you put in there works on RT Systems. So, you know, you don't have to buy it twice or three times. You know, if you want to use the web, you don't have to pay. You know, we have web.rfinder.net where you can download points of interest for your favorite GPSs, including, by the way, the AVMAP, G5 and G6. We support the AVMAP, and you can download points of interest right into that ham radio-enabled GPS, so to speak. We have on the web version, you can download TPE files. You have full mapping. You have full editing of nodes. And you make requests for edits, you guys, on the system. On the handheld, you can make requests for edits. On the web, you can make requests for edits. They do not happen live. We look at every single one of them. Actually, I processed about 70 requests this morning. Those requests came in the last week and a half. So,
that's
you know... new machines that were added, machines that people were asking to be deleted because they were off the air, machines that, the PLs had changed or the call sign changed or whatever. So, we update this stuff constantly.
Now, what is the
and it's done by our end users.
What is the equivalent on the iPhone, the iPad, the to the Google Play Store? What's the equivalent?
Oh, just the App Store. You just go into the Apple App Store and search for R-Finder, and you'll find it lickety split.
There you go.
In fact, the Amazon App Store on Android, R-Finder's up there also.
Okay, that's just so cool. I want to tell you, and I really appreciate you coming on board. If you got any parting comments, anything you want to add, something we forgot to talk about, which I can't imagine.
You know, Ted, you know, you and I always get into these wacky back and forth discussions about all kinds of things. I think we had we covered a lot of stuff today. I think I started to talk about the localization. We now have French, English, Spanish, Japanese, and German. And I have somebody right now working on Portuguese. Somebody down in Brazil is working on the Portuguese version. I'm looking for a translator from Italy. So if anybody from Italy hears this, get in touch with me if you have our finder. And we give our translators a lifetime access to our finder for helping us out. So, And Indonesian and Thai. Those are the other two that are being worked on right now, believe it or not. So we're going to make this available in all of the languages of the world as time goes on. So,
well, you know, that's another thing, too, and I'll say this just briefly, and that is one of the purposes of amateur radio that's stated in the rules. It talks about to the reason why we have the hobby is to provide a pool of qualified technicians, and then the next thing it says is to enhance international goodwill. And so by doing these translations, you're fulfilling that second part of amateur radio's purpose, because when you can connect with the rest of the world and you have the ability to touch other continents, countries, cultures, and so on and so forth, that's one of the purposes as to why we even have the hobby. So, and I think that's important. It's one of the things that we find that we do, because the signal that goes out on this radio show covers the globe, and that really makes it special. Thank you so much.
Well, something else that we do, by the way, just before you go, is, you know, there's, you know, the economy is not particularly in a healthy state. I don't know if you noticed, and I'm sure everybody noticed it. You know, I'm a little tongue-in-cheek about that. But something that we are doing is our two programmers are both hams. Like, I don't just do this myself. Like, I actually have a staff that works on this project. This is not a, a hobby for us. This is actually like a real, you know, a real venture, you know, for creating this thing. And in that, I'm employing two people. They're both ham radio operators. So put in your $10 donation for the year, and really that's what it is. Just, you know, remember you're helping to keep two people employed by doing it. So I want everybody to know that too.
Oh, that's really cool. That's a fantastic thing. Thank you for joining us, and we'll have you back again. I know we will, because things change and things advance, and of course we'll have listeners. Oh, by the way, let's do your website address too, so folks can that have questions or want to contact you, they've got a contact point.
Sure, the website is www.rfinder.net. www.rfinder. That's Romeo Foxtrot, Italy, November, Delta, Echo Romeo, rfinder.net. And we're also on Facebook. So please look for rfinder on Facebook. We have a page up there. And make sure to stop by there and like us so that you can get all the latest and greatest coming out of we're trying to get away from spam emails. People don't seem to like that. So we're trying to move towards social networking and disseminating information that way. So everybody, please stop by our page on Facebook. Look for just search for R Finder in Facebook, and you'll find it. and like us there, and you'll get our information feeds as stuff comes out. So, Ted, I want to thank you for having me on. It's always great to visit with you and visit with your listeners on the air, and always great fun and a privilege. So thank you very much.
Well, you're quite welcome. It's a privilege to have you on because we love amateur radio operators like you. We really do. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we've got for QSO on this radio show. We want to invite you to tune in next week, same time, same station, for another QSO. A special thanks to our guest today, Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, and all the good information on our Finder. 73.